Up next from O'Reilly Media's Emerging Technology Conference, Elizabeth Churchill, a researcher at Yahoo, discusses a project to connect online community activity with community activity in the physical world, towards the goal of building relationships and trust between two groups of colleagues in different time zones. From IT Conversations.
Unfortunately, Jeff Hahn couldn't make it here today. He had to drop out last week, but we were lucky that Elizabeth Churchill was here. And instead of talking about multi-touch displays, we're going to talk about the use of displays in public spaces. So please welcome Liz. Thank you very much. Elizabeth.
Thank you. Thank you. One of my great obsessions is about space and place. And for a long time now, I've actually had a body, and I'm very excited about the fact that I'm embodied in place and space. And one of the things that always gets to me about kind of recent technologies is I spend an awful lot of time sitting at my desk, sitting like this, staring at my screen. And, you know, I like to get up and move around a little bit. So I'm just going to tell you about a project and about a sort of research agenda that I've had for the last several years, which is really about thinking about how we can connect online community activity with offline community activity, the physical world, and to really kind of build bridges between those two. And I'm just going to tell you a little bit about some of the research I've done in that area. And first, I'm going to show you a video. This is a video. For many years, I worked at Fuji Xerox, and we had research labs that were based in Tokyo and in the Bay Area. And we really wanted to kind of build relationships between the folks who were working in the research labs, because we were very much colleagues. And so, as you will see, a lot of this work is really about building the relationships people have, making weak ties strong ties, giving people reasons to build trust so that they can work together. And really, the way I like to think about it is, if we think about a social graph of weak and strong ties, how do we really look at the topology of those ties, those links, the relationships that build, and that build for different purposes? So this work was very much done to help work colleagues build trust with each other, find out a little bit more about each other. And although there was a notional single corporate culture, very different cultures of everyday practice. And I'm just going to show you a video of something that we designed and built to try and bridge these communities. So what that was doing was we had an online space for people to share synchronously, asynchronously, put content that they thought other people might find interesting who were in the community. The community were all signed up. And you could choose to post that content to physical displays in the public space. You could also, what he was doing, the gentleman was doing, was he was sending a message back to the author. Somebody who sent something to the public space, he was physically sending a message back saying yes, and it goes back to the author who publishes in the public space, as well as the online space. And a lot of people sort of asked me, you know, why don't we just have an online space? Well, after a lot of experimentation for many years, you know, I tried an email distribution list. I tried using things like, this was a few years ago, so my initial attempt was using the Palace, if anyone remembers the Palace. We used Muds and Moos. We used, I used Placeware for presentations. And then it kind of became more and more kind of sophisticated, more like social networking sites. And we couldn't get our colleagues to really interact with us or vice versa. We ended up with two subgroups who still maintained their own interactions in their own space, our Japanese colleagues in one and us in the other. How could we get those bridges together? And I think one of the things was to allow people to feel that they could legitimately encounter information and to advertise interests that we had into public space. Because if you're wandering around, you bump into information every day, and you start to find out more about those other people. You start to build trust a little bit around what they're interested in and what they're doing. So that form of peripheral participation, which we do embodied all of the time, but which seems to be sort of lacking, I think, in a lot of online spaces where I'm either a member or I'm not. And it used to be that lurkers were, you know, really problematic. In fact, for humans, lurking is how we find out how to behave in situations that are new cultures to us. We watch others. We emulate others. Children do it. Adults do it. We learn how to be part of a community of practice by watching. And it's that kind of watching and sharing that I'm very interested in. So Here we have isolated individuals looking at an online space. There we have two individuals in front of a screen, and they are co-present, sharing that thing. They are literally kind of looking into the space, looking down into the space of all that internet activity, perhaps. Some of those visualizations we just saw, a really nice example of that. This is really about the social stuff that people want to share, the displays they want to make of their interests into public space for others to encounter. And the physical and digital really do shape each other. So the online and offline bodies and texts I'm very interested in here, and the personal public screens. And there's an image there, and one of my favorite phrases in French is lécher les vitrines, which literally means window shopping. And it's how do we provide window shopping into the online worlds to let people understand how they can start to learn to interact with each other. This issue of serendipity, encountering, and peripheral participation, very important for psychologists, very important, as I say, for learning how to become part of a culture. And Kevin yesterday talked, when he was talking about social cloud, people, friends, data, actions on the web. And I'm also interested in how those translate into physical spaces, to bring those things together. And I want to think about lurking as a very important practice. Watching, inviting, gentle, polite inviting into a world, not you're in or you're out. Did you sign up or not? Icebreakers. We all know about icebreakers. Sociologists have written for many years about the importance of icebreakers. I could post something into the physical world about Dachshunds. Most of you don't know, I love Dachshunds. Once I've posted that, if we're in the lift perhaps, you might say, I didn't know you liked Dachshunds, and I could tell you the story of my Dachshunds. But without that icebreaker, you might not have thought to say anything to me. So as I say, strengthening weak ties, and it's somewhere between push and pull. In the installation I just showed you, one of the other things that we really wanted to do was to try video. And you know, I call this sort of vanity and voyeurism, because one of the things people who posted content wanted to know was who's looking, who's watching. You know, my Flickr stats, I'm always obsessed, but I kind of want to know who's looking, who's watching. I want to see who's watching me. So we attached a camera, and what this was, as information cycled through the display, I touched the display, and a camera just starts to shoot a very no-sound, low-quality image of me touching that thing. As the author or the poster, someone can go in and have a look at all of the times their content was touched, but also little video snips of who's looking. And you have an association of these little clips with what you posted, so you can see how popular you are. I should also point out, scale is an issue here. This scaled nicely because we had a group of about 80 people in one place and about 50 in the other. And of those, people who were very active, there was only about 10 to 15% who were very active posters, although a lot more people who were readers. I'm just going to show you a few of the clips that came from those camera touches. So here we see our colleagues looking at something that was posted in California, appeared on the screen in Tokyo. That's the California lab, looking at something that was posted from somebody in Tokyo. And I want you to look at the fact that these two people are co-present, looking at one thing, very aware of each other, very subtle awareness of the interest each one is showing in something and talking, pointing things out. Very much a physically embodied, shared experience. They're seeing the same thing. The other thing I want you to look at here is not so much the person reading the content, but the people who walk by, who may not be members of that community posting online, but who see that person looking at the online. Watching the watcher is a very important human practice. There's going to be another, there you go, stops, has a look, watches, invites, entices, what's going on, I'm kind of nosy, I want to know. We also saw a lot of people going and getting other members of the community who hadn't signed up and bringing them to look at something. In a way that sending a URL, I think, in email or IM or whatever is somewhat different. We also saw people very aware that someone else was going to be reading this, making comments to the camera for somebody else to pick up later. These are very subtle actions and interactions around content that we always, as humans, engage in. I might also point out, because everyone always asks me, yes, you could push the screen away if you did not want to be seen. And a few people did, but not many. Anyway, so this notion of embodiment, you know, as I say, I like to get off my seat. DDR is one of my favorite things. I love DDR. I'm not a big online gamer. I'm a big DDR gamer. And I want to show you this, not just because of the person playing the DDR, but all of the people watching. And if you watch people watching, when we put the, I should say these installations, we did about 20 different installations of displays in online spaces like this, in corporations, in a cafe gallery, at conferences. One of the perennial, the repeated things we see is somebody looking at the display and they'll kind of go, and they'll watch somebody else watching, and then they'll look around to see if anyone's looking, and then they'll... And so we see this a lot, that kind of inclusion participation. We've already heard a lot about the Wii. The Wii is, I'm not surprised the statistics show that people really want the Wii. They're getting up, they're getting out, they're doing stuff. That's my nephew, who has not stopped playing all the different games. He's up, he's out of his chair, he's like belting things. And Tim had a lovely picture of a number of people all together playing. I just didn't have a picture, but I think that illustrates the point. You don't have to get out of your chair to play with the Wii, but you know, just as your preference goes. Now, I'm going to wrap up. We've had a lot of lovely talk about games and pervasive games and alternative reality games. And I believe Jane McGonigal was talking last year about some of her fabulous games. We know about the Halo alternative online, offline material game that went on over time. And thanks to Victor, Victor pointed out a lot of the urban screen activity that is going on and a lot of developments in that, still predominantly in the art world, in the advertising world. I'm kind of interested in the community world and getting communities involved, so slightly different take, but I really think there's some great work coming out right now. And of course, Mark Weiser, 15 years ago, talked about ubiquitous computing and a world which is sort of instrumented and computed, and we live in the world. If you think about, you know, the virtual world of World of Warcraft, without the specific details, the idea of turning that inside out and us inhabiting a world of interaction and computation and smarts, and polite smarts, if I'm thinking about these community activities. So some of the challenges that we were facing with that first project I showed you was this issue of language barriers. The highly textual online spaces we provided, you know, really, most of our Japanese colleagues spoke very good English. We did not speak particularly good Japanese or write. And, you know, they felt quite excluded from the online space that was primarily textual. But once it became very visual and in a physical space where they could encounter information, that information seemed much less of an uphill climb to get access to. We did try video. There's a lot of work on video conferencing and media spaces with persistent connections between different places. And, you know, when we set that up, it sounded like a good idea until you realize the time zone between us and Japan meant that it was predominantly just dark. And looking at a dark, empty room is not that, you know, good for bonding, I find, with your colleagues. This issue of belonging and in-group, out-group, and this peripheral participation and approach to involvement with affiliation and the approach to being identified with a group, I think, is very important. And one of the greatest challenges is the situatedness of interaction. In the 20 or so installations we did in different places, some of which I'm happy to talk to people about, it was very much a site-specific installation. The infrastructure remained the same, but the interfaces changed, and the interaction changed. The access control issues changed. The desire for editorial changed because the nature of the social group and the nature of the public space was different. And so I understand that for many people what we're trying to do is build things that, you know, are successful in the broader scheme. But one of the challenges, I think, is this tension between a general solution that doesn't address some of these more subtle issues and bespoke challenges. And that's in software and hardware. This idea of gathering situation, mutual monitoring, which is what I've been really talking about, and this idea of invitational, polite, inclusive, peripheral, participant inclusion, all of those things which are very site-specific and place-specific and culturally specific are very hard to design for, but I still think they're important, and one of the challenges is how do we do that? And as part of that, I'm thinking about this idea, and there's many people here in the audience I'd love to talk to about this because I'm only just starting to think about this in these terms, is that these projects have been going on for the last many years. And this this notion, here we are thinking about emergence, the trajectories of emergence about what's possible in software and hardware, but also what the business models are for supporting these, you know, installations and so forth. Very, very curious questions to me, and what are the trajectories of uptake and success? And if you think about 1993, when Mark Weiser was, you know, envisioning his dream, and, you know, Tim had some nice other examples, it's like, how do some of those things come to market so that we can benefit, and people who are not the uber alpha geeks and the people in the know can also benefit? I don't have an answer, I just think it's an interesting set of questions. What's possible, what's probable, and what's desirable? I'm going to leave you with a quote from one of my favorite sociologists about this, the situatedness and this, like, subtle actions and interactions that we think we're only starting to get at in online situations with, you know, views and winks and booze mail. Love the booze mail. So I shall use the term, this is Irving Goffman in his 1963 book, Behavior in Public Spaces. I shall use the term gathering to refer to any set of two or more individuals whose members include all and only those who are at the moment in one another's immediate presence. By the term situation, I shall refer to the full spatial environment. Anywhere within an entering person becomes a member of the gathering. That approach, that is, or then does become present to the others, makes themselves known as well as, you know, actively, as well as being seen peripherally. Situations being when mutual monitoring occurs and laps when the second last person has left. In order to stress the full extent of any such unit, I will sometimes employ the term situation at large. And that situation at large is what I'm really interested in discussing with you technically and socially and in terms of what's possible. Thank you.
You've been listening to a presentation from O'Reilly Media's Emerging Technology Conference.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Mike Seifried. Our website editor was Peggy Drew. The series producer is Sathyesh Chakravarthy.
This is Phil Wendley. I hope you'll join me next time for another exciting presentation from eTech.